It's Alum Group's Andrea Lay, PacFew's Melissa Burdick, live with me here in Connecticut, the Wizard of Woodland Hills Tree, and I'm PBSB from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 15th, and it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We find them hubristically intriguing. We hope you do too. They're brought to you through our partnership with Retail Wit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com. It's retail right now. Melissa, kick us off.
Hey, Fresh Four listeners. Dollar General celebrates opening its 20,000th store. There you go, 20,000. U.S.-based discount retailer Dollar General has opened its 20,000th store, celebrating the occasion in Alice, Texas. The grand opening celebrations were attended by senior leaders and vendors. Dollar General Executive Vice President of Store Operations and Development, Steve Deckard, commented, "We believe each store provides a positive impact in our hometowns through convenient access to affordable essentials, career growth, opportunities for employees, and the ability for local nonprofits, schools, and libraries to advance through Dollar General Literacy Foundation grants." Dollar General also awarded $20,000 to support educational and tutoring programs through donations to a local library and community group, as well as providing new books to a local elementary school. Dollar General employs more than 17,500 Texas employees through its store, distribution center, and private fleet presence in the state. On to you, Sri.
Thank you, Melissa and Peter. Jessica Alba has actually stepped down as Chief Creative Officer of The Honest Company, a company she founded. So after nearly 12 years of the company, Alba shared the news in an Instagram post on Tuesday, April 9th. "It is with grateful heart that 12 years after founding The Honest Company, I'm stepping down from my leadership role as CCO. However, I will continue to provide strategic advice through my role on the board," Alba wrote. What's next, Peter?
Oreo reimagines ubiquitous internet menu icon to dole out discounts. Mondelez international brand Oreo has launched a commerce activation dubbed the Oreo menu that aims to re-envision the internet's ubiquitous three-line hamburger menu navigation tool as a two-stacked Oreo cookies. Key to the effort is a microsite where consumers can enter any tab or category name they see when clicking on the three-bar menu icon on the internet as a promo code to receive a deal for Oreo cookies that can be redeemed at Kroger as part of an exclusive partnership. The activation includes an explanatory video and is being driven by influencer content along with digital and social media to drive engagement. The effort follows Oreo's first Super Bowl ad in a decade earlier this year. Andrea, what do you have to close us out?
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Shein has copyright infringement baked into its business model. Shein is facing a class action lawsuit that alleges that the fast fashion company uses an industrial scale scheme of systematic digital copyright infringement against small designers and artists, according to court documents last week. Attorneys for the group of plaintiffs say that Shein uses sophisticated electronic systems that algorithmically scour the internet for popular works created by artists and misappropriates these works to manufacture and sell them as Shein products without attribution to the creators. The complaint is the latest in a series of copyright infringement lawsuits filed against the fast fashion giant, including an ongoing one from last year that claimed violation of the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organization Act.
Thank you, Andrea. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded.
Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our co-hosts, Sri Rajagopalan and Peter V.S. Bond, explore how brands and retailers engage with consumers online, in-store, and everywhere in between. And now, here are Sri and Peter.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to this episode of the CPG Guys podcast. I'm, of course, Sri, the West Coast CPG guy and a Yankees fan. And joining me, of course, is the East Coast CPG guy and a Dodgers fan. Sounds pretty weird, doesn't it? West Coast, East Coast, opposite ends of the spectrum. Someday for our audience, Peter, we're going to have to solve the mystery of how that happened. But Mr. Peter is, of course, the Golden Voice himself. And it's that time of the year. Barbecues, sunshine, and water parks are in full swing. Vacation, family vacations are in full swing. Loved ones get to see each other. Travel is completely ramped back up. There's flight delays, cancellations, and all the woes of too many people traveling. But most importantly, it's the week of a great country, the USA's Independence Week. So from the CPG guys, a happy Independence Day to all of you. We wish you a great week and a memorable the 4th, and enjoy time with your loved ones. And now the man, the machine himself, the Golden Voice with the radio voice, the VP of Commercial Strategy at Fetch Rewards, Mr. Bond himself. Peter, how you doing, given that at this stage it's safe to say the Yankees are the World Series champs for 2022? Of course, I don't want to jinx it since the All-Star break's coming, but you and I are going to the game.
Yeah, I seem to remember a year where the Red Sox thought that they were going to be the World Series champs at the All-Star game. And, well, Bucky Dent had something different to say about that. But in any event, Sri, I'm doing well, enjoying all the ball games that you and I are seeing together. A lot of traveling all over the place. My goodness. I'm actually earning my American Airlines status this year. It's kind of crazy, but
travel's back.
Travel is indeed back. So it's great. I'm looking forward to today's conversation, Sri. We've got right in our sweet spot. So let's get to it, shall we?
The interesting thing about the Bucky Dent comment, Peter, is he wasn't facing an opponent that was a 0.700 or higher at 52-19. So last night when I nearly gave up, here we go yet again. The slugging simply hasn't stopped. Of course, I'm aware that in the playoffs, slugging will not get you through. It's the pitching, but our starting ERA is still incredible, still below 3, despite a few hiccups last 10 games. But maybe the All-Star break will be that much necessary break for the tired arms. But Before we get to our guests, I'll remind our audience that all of our content can be found by visiting cpgguys.com on any browser of your choice. We have a brand new website, tons of rich content, including a merch store. Every episode is cataloged. All the platforms, 40 plus, you can find it on. You can just click on the choice of platform you have. We have the digital liner notes of the podcast now on the website as well. So enjoy it while it's organized into themes like retail media, loyalty. And do sign up there for our forthcoming newsletter, which Peter and I aim to put out later this year. If you aren't already following us on LinkedIn, all you got to do is go to a browser, type linkedin.com, go to the search area, and type CPG guys in the search box. And when you get to our page, simply click follow. That way you'll get to see all of this content we produce. The best thing about it, our personal belief and mission, content and education will always be free, and that's what we are. It's always been about the education and sharing journey, and I promise you it'll remain that way. Remember to check out the FMCG Guys podcast, hosted by our friends Daniel and Efrain. They take our CPG Guys podcast format across the pond, across the Atlantic, and speak to retail and FMCG luminaries from a Western European perspective. All you got to do is visit FMCGguys.com. Peter and I are exceptionally proud to partner with Next Up, also known as the Network of Executive Women, whose mission it is to advance all women in business and to promote the cause of gender equality and career development. Visit nextupisnow.org/CPGguys on our very own page there to learn more about this great group. In the middle of Wednesday episodes, you can find an Easter egg from us on their upcoming seminars and events. And now to our guest today. Today's episode features none other than Oguri. Who are they? Oguri focuses on calling itself the personified advertising company, the breakthrough end-to-end advertising solution built and optimized for mobile, allowing you to achieve the highest marketing performance while respecting user privacy, a very important topic these days with the whole cookies area being challenged, and with future-proof technology. Look at these words, Peter. To decompose the world of cookie-less advertising, performance-focused outcomes, we have none other than Drew Childers, the head of CPG sales of Oguri. Join Peter and me in welcoming him to the podcast. Drew, how you doing? You can tell us a little bit about World Series Baseball, too.
Yeah. Well, we've been, you guys are talking about Major League Baseball. We've been focused on college baseball down here in Arkansas. So, unfortunately, Arkansas was put out of the College World Series yesterday. But good run. Probably shouldn't have got as far as we did. But we can transition over to Major League Baseball now. But we've been heavily rooted in college baseball lately.
some point, Arkansas will get a major league team, hopefully. Before we get to our questions, Drew, Peter and I have carefully curated for our conversation, would you please let our audience know where on the web they can learn more about the company Yoguri, and would you give us a brief introduction to your company and your specific role there?
Yeah, no problem. So, I mean, you can find Yoguri on the internet at www.yoguri.com. And I'll tell you, I've been here for almost 5 years now, and we're a European company. We came to the U.S. about 6 years ago, and you mentioned some of the buzzwords that, you know, we talk about and have been talking about, not just today, but for a long time: cookieless, ID-less, consumer choice, consumer privacy. I mean, I think that when I describe Yoguri, I always describe it as, you know, look, we're a global ad tech leader rooted in consumer choice and privacy and built for performance. And there's a lot to unpack there. But at the end of the day, we just found that, you know, there's a way to connect, you know, brands to connect with consumers on a meaningful way without annoying them. It's to make it very simply put. And that's what we've been really focused on for a number of years here. And so when we talk about the transition into cookieless and ID-less, it's a very exciting topic for us because we've been poised and ready for this for 5 years that I've been here.
So good to hear, especially the word cookieless. You know, you should look to patent that. That's what I would recommend. But thank you for that.
Yeah, we almost should, because I mean, everybody's talking about cookieless right now, but we've actually been cookieless and ID-less for a year now, whereas, you know, the conversation's starting, but it's been in our heads for a long time.
We'll include links to your LinkedIn profile, the Yoguri corporate site, and the digital liner notes of this podcast episode. You'll find that on our website. But let's get the conversation started, and I'll kick it off with the first one for you, Drew, which is the mission of Yoguri. There's a lot of strong words in there, which talks about performance-based outcomes, guaranteed outcomes, seamless add-to-cart integration. Give us the scoop on how this comes together. Like, what does Yoguri do in simple English?
Yeah, so it's a great question. So there's really, you know, there's a couple parts of CPG. You have really shopper marketing focused stuff, and then you have branding focused initiatives. And what I've found for a long time in this space is that a lot of times those two things don't go hand in hand. They don't communicate as well as they should together. And so in some ways, you almost kind of find them competing. And so when we talk about, you know, guaranteed outcomes and performance-based pricing and performance-based anything, there's kind of a shopper side of it and a branding side of it. From a shopper perspective, yeah, I mean, look, the goal, you know, what we try to help, you know, brands do is they're trying to sell more stuff. They're trying to sell more stuff at a retailer of their choice or wherever the shopper team may be. And that's simply what we try to do. And so for many years, Yoguri was a consent-based technology, meaning that we actually gain consent from consumers to really understand, you know, more about their mobile journey and what they were doing on their devices. And what we found was that, you know, look, there's it's a busy ecosystem out there. There's a lot going on. But first and foremost, if you can find who is a shopper of a particular retailer, that is first and foremost the most important thing you can do. After that, you can start to figure out what makes the DNA of that person, what are kind of the things that they're interested in. And so, you know, really for us, you know, we were fortunate enough to have that consent-based technology years ago. I'd mentioned the word GDPR in Bentonville, Arkansas 4 years ago, and people looked at me like, what in the world are you talking about? Why is this important? And you kind of fast forward to today. And what it does is it really gave us a framework to work in and a place for us to, you know, migrate into this cookieless and ID-less world. But at the end of the day, what we understand is consumer behavior, consumer journey, the mobile journey behaviors, which lead to, you know, predicted outcomes. And so when we talk about guaranteed performance, let me just set the record straight. We don't have a magic wand that says when we serve an ad, someone buys it. But what we can do is say, look, if we know that this person is a shopper of this retailer, they have a high affinity for your brands. And oh, by the way, we're only going to charge you when someone engages with that media, whether that's a click, whether that's a cart, whether that's a completing a video, then for us, it feels like, you know, that's as good as you can do today in order to get someone down that purchase funnel as fast as you can and to get something into that cart as seamlessly as possible. And so for us, it was simply just, you know, aligning our pricing model to what's important to our brands. If a shopper marketer says we need to sell more stuff online, well, great. We should be charging you on a cost per transfer, meaning we'll only charge you when something's in the basket versus trying to charge you for, you know, impressions or things like that. And so for us, it's just focusing on what's important to our clients and then how do we translate that into, you know, actionable things for them.
Peter, what a big deal that is to have a model that's actually based on the transfer only and not based on a CPM in the advertising world. Like, you know, I come from, I don't know how many decades of advertising, my entire CPG career, 2.5 at this stage, decades. But transitioning from CPM to true value-based, which is based on a true consumer that I can land on the lower funnel, epic. What do you think, Peter?
Hey, Drew, welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. Great to have you here. And what you're talking about today is of intense interest to our audience. So let's get right down to it. You know, cookieless advertising, while there may have been a little bit of a false start, it's pretty much here. We want to understand from you, what does this really mean for brands? You know, how do brands continue to drive success without, the specific cookie ad tracking? You know, how are you navigating this new world for your clients?
Yeah, well, I can say one thing. I think brands need to figure it out quickly. And here's the reason why is, you know, we love when things are tailored to us and we love when things are customized to us. We hate, but as humans, we really hate ads at the end of the day. And so, you know, there's a kind of a balance of, yes, I want someone to do something that's for me, but also I don't want too much of it. And so, there's going to be a lot of workaround solutions and things like that, that you will see a lot of, you know, providers still, you know, put out there in the marketplace where they can try to match this ID to that and use device graphs and things like that. But at the end of the day, you know, where I think that we've done a really nice job of is, again, we were consumer first from day one. And so we collected consent. Consent allowed us to, you know, build really a huge database globally of consumer behavior and mobile journey marketing behavior is what we called it. And so now I think we just have a leg up when we start to look at, you know, going to a cookieless world. And so we're not collecting that information anymore. Consumer, you know, we listen as a consumer first company. We've listened to consumers for many years. Consumers don't want consent anymore. They want to opt out as soon as they possibly can. We recognize that. We've learned that. And so for us, you know, and what brands need to understand is there's still a way to have a meaningful dialogue with a consumer. You just don't have to annoy them. And so for us, it's about taking all those learnings that we've had for many, many years and all of that data that we collected, we didn't sell to any. We didn't give that away. We didn't decouple it. We didn't sell it. We didn't do anything with it. So we still, you know, sit on all of that data today. But we're not using it in a way to go chase people around the web. We're tying it back to assets now. So like, you know, that someone that goes to allrecipes.com, for example, they're into cooking, right? It's not like they're there for airline travel. And so, you know, I think there's this fear of, well, if I don't have personalization, then I'm not going to know who my consumers really are anymore. And at the end of the day, the consumer itself doesn't change a lot. And so just being able to, you know, really understand where those consumers are, how to talk to those consumers in a meaningful way, you can, I mean, our performance has gone up since we've been cookieless and ID-less. So I really think that's kind of the, you know, what brands need to be thinking about. If you're a brand that becomes associated as someone that's annoying to consumers, that's not going to be a good thing for your brand. We are getting smarter as consumers. We are getting annoyed. We understand that there's technologies out there now that can prevent those things from happening. So brands better figure it out really quickly or they're going to see negative repercussions from not.
The world of cookieless advertising indeed is, I would say, relatively new. You might be one of the few that I've gotten to talk to on the show, the CPG guys, about cookieless advertising. We did address it maybe a year or so ago when it was first announced that Apple would be going down that path and Google, et cetera. But it's glad that a year later that we found somebody who's been living into it for a whole year. You know, while looking at your website, I also noticed that one of the capabilities you have is survey-based responses. And so I'd love for our audience to know, what are these survey-based capabilities you have? What sort of audience can be reached? And how often can a brand leverage this? And do you encourage brands to actually leverage it to tailor the ideal targeted campaign? And if at all possible, Drew, give us a couple examples of who you worked with to date in this capability.
Yeah, so that's a great question. And the way that I talk about surveys is surveys as a standalone solution is not a solution, right? So anyone can write a question and anyone can send that question out there and hope that they get responses. The way that Ogre uses surveys is in conjunction with that mobile journey marketing data that we've talked about for, you know, understanding that consumer behavior for so many years that we've been able to do. So what surveys really help us do is either validate what we already know just to make sure we're still right. So it's like, hey, we want to run a survey and say, hey, do you still own two plus cats at your house? Right? We think we already know who that person is. We think it's tied to this asset. You know, we think we have a good foundation there. We just need to validate that we're still accurate with that. And so that's really the way that we use surveys. And then the other way is to learn new things. So, I mean, there's a lot of brands that come to us and say, look, I'm really trying to find this very niche audience that does this certain thing. Great. That's where a survey can, you know, really help us understand more than what we already knew, you know, prior to. So the way we use them is really to validate one or enrich, you know, what we already know. And so I think that a lot of, you will start to hear the word surveys, I'm sure a lot, you know, over the next couple of years, because I think it goes back to not everyone is prepared for, that cookie-less and ID-less world. And so they'll be scrambling to find things that are, you know, still compliant and still okay to do. But again, I don't think a survey itself is differentiating. So, I mean, we use surveys all the time to still say, are you a Walmart Plus shopper? Are you a Target? You know, are you still a Target shopper? Do you go three plus more days per week? That's information that we used to be able to collect at the device level that we've just gotten away from. But that's still useful information to us for ad decisioning. And so that's really the way that we approach surveys. It's not a standalone solution. It just really helps validate or enrich what we already know.
So, Drew, as a personified advertising company, you do talk in a lot of your content about performance.
Yeah. And again, I think I want to preface again that we don't have a magic wand. We don't say, when you see this, there's no doubt whatsoever. So that is not our sales pitch. That is not what we're out there talking about. We're putting our money where our mouth is. And so, you know, for shopper marketers, for example, they know that they are tasked with selling more stuff at a retailer, right? So, like, why would we not align our performance and our KPIs to match theirs? We shouldn't be selling something different to them that doesn't match what they're trying to do with their buyers and with their retailers. And so guaranteed performance for us is when we talk about, you know, our model of cost per transfer, for example, on the carting side of it. If you're a shopper marketer and you need to get stuff in a basket and we have a solution that comes down to say, we will only charge you when something gets in a basket. As a shopper marketer, for me, I would say that feels really good. And the way we're able to do that goes back to the amount we know about consumer behavior and the assets in which that, you know, we're running ads on. That's what helps us guarantee performance. It's our targeting. So if you just walk through a typical user flow, if I were to serve you guys an ad and you're not a Walmart shopper and it says click here to add to cart and you click on it and you're not a Walmart shopper, well, guess what? It's going to take you to a Walmart page, make you log in, sign up for some kind of Walmart membership or something. Well, that's not going to lead as a consumer. Do you think you're going to sign up for that at that point and then you're going to put it in your cart? And then that's not realistic. And so for us, it goes back to understanding who are the shoppers of that retailer, who are the people, you know, that we're really trying to reach. And if we're reaching the right people, which we tell you as a brand that we're going to do, then we should put our money where our mouth is and say, we're only going to charge you when that consumer does exactly what we want them to do. And so as a brand, we just try to, you know, we eat the risk and we say, look, we want skin in the game as well. I mean, we talked about this a little bit earlier today. The difference in what we do in a CPM buy is vastly different. So in a CPM buy, which is what's very normal for the rest of the world, and still today in a programmatic setting, I mean, look, we have, you know, we do a lot of CPM stuff on the programmatic side, display, mobile, but from a shopper marketing perspective, CPM is, you know, me as an advertiser, I'm going to buy it for this and I'm going to charge whatever I can to you for that. And the difference in those two things is how I make my money. For us, we're still buying all of that media on a CPM, but if I'm only charging you when I'm getting the people to do what you want them to do to get the outcomes that you want, then that's us putting our skin in the game. That's us eating some of the risk and saying we're aligned to the same KPIs. And I just think that, you know, that's where the guaranteed performance comes is you should only charge. We should only charge you when someone engages with an ad, completes a video, adds something to cart. We shouldn't charge you for anything else outside of that because there's so many other things you could do. You know, if I'm just serving impressions and saying I have good viewability, like, come on, like that's not really solving any problems.
That's a big word in a big industry. You know, an industry that's over $1.5 trillion annually. So I do want to come back to it for 1 second, right? When you really ask a brand to make investments on the basis of outcomes versus a CPM, that's what it is at the end of the day. I want you to go a little bit deeper.
Yeah, I think it goes back to you really better know your audience and you really better know your publishers and you really better know the DNA of all of those things. Otherwise, we couldn't guarantee anything. If we were just, you know, buying exchange inventory and, you know, trying to find shoppers in some spray and pray approach, then of course we would never, you know, guarantee anything. But I think we're confident enough. And again, we're speaking shopper marketing stuff here. There's a whole branding side. I mean, that, you know, all of Ogre is not shopper marketing. This is, you know, one bucket we're talking about today. But when you get into the branding side, obviously, you know, programmatically, you can't buy on a cost per click or a cost per transfer. It's all in a CPM. But when we're talking about these guaranteed outcomes, you know, for us, it does mean we just have a lot of confidence that we really understand the mobile journey behavior of consumers and have for a long time. And we're willing to put our money where our mouth is and say, look, brands, you need to achieve these things. You're telling us you need to achieve these things. We feel confident enough that we have the ability to do that. So we're only going to charge you if those things happen. And look, at the end of the day, for a brand, if we serve the wrong impression to the wrong person and no one engages with it, that's free media. So the way I look at it, 80% of the impressions we run are free for clients. The rest of them are the ones they pay for.
Peter, did you hear that? The CPG guys have to sign up for this free media offer.
But I think the thing is, it's not really free, Drew, since you're so confident at the outcome. It's probably rarely going to be free because there's going to be outcomes. Because if it was free, I'd have signed up yesterday, man. But
as a brand, that's what I think we've done. What's really resonated a lot for the companies we work with is that I can tell you before a campaign starts how many people are going to engage with the unit, either on a completed video or a cost per click. How, if it's a cost per transfer and we know that stuff's going to get in a basket, okay, how much does that item cost? It's a $10 item and I'm guaranteeing you 100,000 carts in there. Great. You do the math. Like, you know exactly before you run a campaign with Ogree what you're going to get. And I think that's just a huge difference on the CPM side from a shopper perspective, where it's like, all right, great, you're going to get 15 million impressions. What does that mean? Like, are they to the right people? Did they do something? What does that mean? You know, and so we just try to take it a level deeper and say, look, this is what we think you should be thinking about, because we've heard from you. We built this solution based off what the feedback from clients is. It's not like we said the industry needs to do this. It's us listening and saying, okay, let's figure out a way to go, you know, meet the objectives of our clients while also trying to make money. We're not trying to be a nonprofit advertising company.
No, that wasn't in the mission to be a nonprofit advertising company, but I still think in a world of, you know, for me, my mind is naively still connecting to, in a world of cookie and ad tracking, the guarantee is easier to do, but you guys must be damn good at what you do in a cookie, especially in a cookieless world to do that. But let me remind our audience that we're talking to Drew Childers, head of CPG sales at Ogree. So I want to get to loyalty, consumer loyalty. To a brand or retailer, is it real these days in an inflation-based era? Like, how are you helping brands and retailers retain their most valuable customers, their MVP customers, especially with in a cookie-less world?
Yeah, and that's a great question again. And we all know we behave differently than we did 3 years ago. I used to go to this grocery store on Tuesdays and Wednesdays is when I shopped, and I did. We were very routine oriented with how we shopped and how we behaved, and you throw all that out the window now. And I mean, I shop at more retailers than I ever have before. And I think that it's easier now. I mean, I think that goes back to, you know, retailers have understood that it's not just, you know, it's not just online or it's not just in store. There is kind of an emergence of those teams. And we're even seeing brand teams, you know, they used to be called brand teams. Now it's like commerce teams. And like, there's just all these different words and terms and lingo going on out there. But what it means at the end of the day is consumers are shopping at more retailers and they're more open to trying more brands. And I think for, you know, a brand today, you better, if you're going to launch something or if you want to, you know, drive success with something, you better really know what you're trying to accomplish. And you better be very connected with your brand teams and shopper teams alike to make sure that those two things are working together. I just think that still too oftentimes I see brand team does it. You see this commercial on TV. Great. There's this new Oreo or there's this new thing that's unbelievable. It's cool. But then like, why didn't the shopper teams play off of that and make sure that now I have the ability to add that to my cart in a seamless way? I just don't think those two things always work, you know, hand in hand. And so, you know, just being aware, I think for retailers and for brands, knowing that people are more open to trying new things and it's shopping at more places. And you just need to be very aware of what you're trying to accomplish and then work with partners that can help you accomplish those things. And I'm not saying that's always Ogree, but like, there are, you know, you just need to be more aware, I think, than in the past. Like, I think a lot of retailers took for granted their audience and just said, they're going to come back. They're always going to come back. They're going to come in this store. They're going to add more stuff to the basket. But in reality, maybe they come in store to this place, but it's only once a month now where it used to be three times a month, you know.
Hey, Drew, let's shift and talk a little bit about how you're helping your clients in the space of e-commerce. We've seen some very accelerated transformation over the last few years with the emergence of e-commerce growth as a result of the pandemic. Home delivery, curbside, BOPUS, all of this. Really, how is Ogree helping brands find, you know, the right audience at the right moment in this new shopper journey that has so many different, ultimately, fulfillment models associated with it?
Well, I think the first thing that has been challenging, and because brands were built this way, was, look, I'm tasked with in-store, so I need to sell in-store. If something sells online, I actually don't like it as a person. But then someone else gets credit for that. And now it's like, if we run a campaign and it's an e-commerce campaign or it's a grocery pickup campaign and we're doing this add to cart thing, but someone actually comes in the store and buys it, like, is that a bad thing? You know, like the thing you're trying to sell was actually sold. And so I think that goes back to the previous question, which was just understanding that people are more open to shopping in different ways and trying new things. But yes, at the end of the day, I mean, there are still people that go in store, and that's why we use a lot of different measurement partners to say, you know, are we being successful in what we try to do? If the mission of this campaign was to drive e-commerce, you know, sales, or if the mission of this campaign was to drive in-store sales, you know, how are we looking at that? And I think, you know, one of the things that's always kind of frustrated me in this space is that a lot of times, you know, we have a lot of measurement partners that we work with that can measure both e-com, in-store, whatever. But also all these brands have, you know, analyst teams and things, people at their own resources that can really understand, are we making an impact on what we were trying to accomplish? And so, you know, I just think that don't always let us ogres and advertisers of the world grade our own homework. I mean, do your own research, do your own things to make sure that the stuff that we're doing is actually effective to, you know, your brands. But, you know, yeah, it's a challenging climate, but I think just, again, it goes back to, you know, being aware and knowing that consumer, it's okay if we're running an e-commerce driven campaign and we're adding things to cart, but someone actually buys it in store. Like, how do we start to bridge those two things together and say that the media is actually being very effective? It's not that it wasn't effective in this area or not effective in this area. It's being very effective in measuring how we did from an e-commerce perspective, but also we were driving in-store sales as well. Those two things, to me, that's a win. And then you put the brand thing on top of that, lay it with the shopper. I mean, that's how brands win today, in my opinion.
Can't doubt that one. Love the advice that you're kind of putting out there in the first place, right? So in that very spirit and nature, as you're starting to talk about where should brands focus, et cetera, and where should retail focus, and loyalty is being something that you can't take for granted. Funny part is, Drew, my co-host here works for a company that's actually focused in creating loyalty with the data that they create. What habits do you think the pandemic may have, I'm using a word very carefully here, permanently changed from a shopper perspective, and especially discovery, browsing, searching? Is it all like 100% or close to 100% digital these days? And then especially when I think about innovation, right? In a prior world, innovation was mostly, I would say, 90% of the time discarded by an end cap in store. What's the deal these days?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, how can a 12-year-old make $5 million a year on TikTok these days? Like, I'm still trying to figure out, how does a fax machine work? You know, so we're in, you know, 2022, and you're right. I mean,
when you figure out the TikTok algorithm, how the 12-year-old does it, Peter and I'm not 12. Like, give us a call. We'd like to be part of it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I want to do nothing and make a bunch of money. That sounds amazing. The answer to that question is it's super challenging. And I think I've talked about this a couple of times through this, you know, discussion. But to me, I still think the biggest miss is innovation usually comes from a brand. So there's either a new flavor, a new product, a new size, a new something that's going on. I just don't think that when innovation comes out, it goes all the way down the chain. So I think sometimes innovation happens up here for a brand, and then there's, you know, there's a bunch of awareness that goes out about it, whether it's TV or whether it's radio, whether it's no matter what it may be. But I don't think that always trickles down to the shopper side of the business. And I just think that if we could ever get to a place where you're running the awareness piece of it, you know, and you're really getting attention out there, you want new eyeballs on it, but then also working at the same time to make sure that innovation, is it exclusive to a retailer? Is it not exclusive to a retailer? Like, what are the intricacies of the innovation? I think that if you could ever really get that upper funnel to work with that lower funnel stuff, I think ultimately that's where you're going to see the greatest impact from a conversion perspective, both at retail and or wherever you're trying to get them to go. I just still think which is so crazy at 2022, and we've all been doing this a long time, that we're still talking about brand teams and shopper teams or, you know, retail teams and non-retail teams just not connected all the time. And I think that you've already got the investment, the dollars are already working. If you could get them to work together, I just think that's really where the innovate, you know, how to launch innovation. I think that's really where it comes into play and where it can be most successful. And I still just don't see that today.
Well, I'll tell you this, Drew. I just came from a week-long course in omnichannel leadership that was being put on by Cornell University. We had a lot of brand leaders there, CMOs, directors of e-commerce. And I can say small sample size, but universally what I heard is that they are bringing all of those decisions in-house, that they are centrally and in a unified way making their advertising decisions. It's no longer we let the Amazon team do it themselves, and we control Amazon, but it's up to the trade to figure out all of their individual brick and mortar customers. I think there's a paradigm shift, and it's happening right now. I think that's really encouraging. Hey, I've got one last question for you in our conversation. You know, because you danced around it a little bit, let's dig in and really get a better understanding. To get brands to invest in this day and age with the ability to break down performance, metrics are critically important, right? They're not going to shift their budgets in a dramatic way without the ROI metrics behind it. So can you give us an idea for the work that you're doing? What do you provide to help your clients measure success? What short-term, you know, real-time, and how are the programs optimized for success? And would love to have some examples of kind of what you're delivering against in this respect.
Yeah, that's a good question. And so for us, it's always been about we never wait for someone else to determine our fate. We kind of make our own fate here, and we always push forward, and we always think a little bit, try to be a little bit ahead. For us, it's really, you know, every brand has a bunch of metrics at their disposal that they can use any day. It's just, how do you use those metrics together? And I'll give you an example. You know, one of the things that we've been talking a lot about at Ogre and talking to our clients a lot about is, you know, the metric of VCR, right? So like, it's a great metric. It's the standard for video. I mean, that is how everything is measured. What's your VCR? How do you know, I want a 95% video completion rate for this campaign. If you can't provide that, then I'm going to work with someone else. What we've found, though, is when you look at VCR in isolation, it doesn't tell the whole story. One of the things that we've really been digging into is this idea or this metric of fully on screen, which means how much of the video was actually on screen. So fully on screen is determined by 100% of the pixels are fully in view for at least 50% of the duration of the video, right? So at least half of the video must be seen all the time. The industry standard for that is somewhere in the 30% range, meaning that you could have 100% VCR, yet only 30% of that video was fully on screen for at least 50% of the duration. That just doesn't sound right, right? So so for us, it's not about changing. We're not trying to get any brand to change their metrics or to come up with a new metric that's only specific to Ogre. It's using the tools that you have at your disposal to say, okay, those two things should honestly, you know, be side by side. So if Ogre's VCR is lower than, you know, your 98 or 100% partner that's calling that, but our fully on screen rate is more in line with what our VCR is, to me as a brand, that seems very important to me. So when you think about branding campaigns, it's about, I need my ad to be seen, and I really need it to be remembered. And the only way someone's going to actually purchase it or actually going to do something with it is if they can see it and actually remember it. Well, if 100% of the video is completed, but only 30% of the people actually saw 50% of it, I mean, the metrics just don't kind of add up. So for us, it's really just challenging clients to say, just look at things a little bit differently. And that's kind of on the branding side. And then, you know, when you get into the shopper side, yeah, it's about in-store sales, and it's about return on ad spend, and it's about sales lift and working with partners to help, you know, really validate those things. But for us, it's about every client has all of these tools at their disposal. It's just about thinking a little bit differently. I mean, then, you know, some of the metrics that we're using today are the same metrics we used when they were invented. And a lot has just changed. When we talked about cookieless, we talked about ID-less, we've talked about, you know, not as much loyalty for retailers, not as much loyalty for brand. Like, the world and the landscape has changed. And I think metrics and the way we look at performance-based media has to evolve as well. And that's all we're really simply trying to, you know, challenge clients to do is just look at it a little bit differently. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I just think that those two things, when we talk about VCR and fully on screen, that's a great example of something that, you know, I think brands should absolutely be looking for it and not settling for anything less than that, to be honest with you. I mean, these investments are large.
Drew, before I wrap up the episode here, if I gave you the floor for a couple minutes here and said, give us that 90-second elevator spiel. Why Oguri? Why should brands give you a call after this? What would that be?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, I don't even think I need 90 seconds. It's that we're aligned to the brands. So our technology is built for consumers. Brands are built for consumers. So we're both aligned there. Everything that we do has the consumer at front and center of every decision we make. So even from, you know, we talked about 5 years ago when we came to the U.S. and we were collecting consent and using words like GDPR and CCPA in the U.S. and people looked at us like, I'm not that, I don't even know what that means. That's not important to me, but we stuck with it. And that, because that was our story. And we just always believed that there's a better way. There's a right way to, for brands and consumers to have a meaningful dialogue together without either one of those people abusing their privileges. So for us today, it's about staying with those same principles. You know, we always are the first to adopt. We will never wait on someone else to tell us when to change. And for us, again, like, you know, going cookie-less, going ID-less a year ago, as the industry started to talk about it today, it puts us as, I've always, you know, the clients that I talk to all the time, they look at us as a thought leader. And, you know, when we were talking about this is what was going to happen, not that we, you know, we don't have a crystal ball, and I'm not saying we're the smartest people in the world, but 4 years ago when, you know, 5 years ago when we came to the U.S. and we were having these conversations, this is what we told people was going to happen. And that you need to start preparing for how, as a brand, are you still going to be able to be effective and have meaningful dialogue with consumers in a world where it may become more and more challenging. And for us, it's just helping clients navigate that ecosystem without sacrificing performance at the end of the day. And that's, we're still a performance-driven advertising company, just rooted in consumer privacy and choice.
To me, that's the key word, being rooted on driving performance. So let me remind our audience that you can find all of our content by going to a browser and typing cpgguys.com. And if you think you or your company has some thought leadership to contribute to a community discussion, all you have to do is drop an email at contact@cpgguys.com. And maybe you can join us on the podcast. Don't forget to drop us a rating and review at cpgguys.com on our website on the navigation bar right up top. The reason we ask you for that, the rating tells us how we're doing. But the review tells us whether we're getting it right as well. Do we have the right audience, right topics? Because at the end of the day, you shape the show. You tell us who comes on. Thank you to the near 14K followers on LinkedIn. We know that's a big number. We love that you've shown us the love. We can't thank you enough for that and growing fast. Drew, thank you for joining the CPG guys.
Enjoyed it. Hey, and we didn't settle the debate between how West Coast is Yankees and East Coast is Dodgers, but go Yankees. In my opinion, so.
Second person on the show who's come here and said, go Yankees outside of me. So I'm proud that now I got a partner in this journey here of baseball. But Peter, let me ask you to summarize what you learned on the episode here and what would you share with the audience about Oguri?
Thanks, Sri. Yeah, this was a great conversation. I loved how Drew finished it out by mentioning and really emphasizing that Oguri helps their clients navigate this ecosystem without sacrificing performance. I really like the fact that they have, when it comes to programmatic advertising, they have skin in the game, right? It really is pay for performance, and that, you know, a lot of their clients as a result of that are getting a good chunk of impressions for free because that's how they've built their pay-for-performance system, and I think that's quite noble. You know, the last thing I'll say is you don't hear this come from a lot of advertisers where you say, hey, don't let me grade my own work. Seek that measurement from outside as well, because we want you to understand that we're actually delivering the results. We're not just saying that we are delivering the results. We want you to know it, and we want you to trust that. So that's pretty much the kind of honesty and transparency that I would expect of a world-class advertiser, and I think that's what Oguri is doing.
Peter, thank you so much for that. Pleasure doing this week over week with you. And for our audience, we will see you soon. It's a wrap on another episode of the CPG Guys.
The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only.
By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.